Hi, everyone. Thanks for joining us today. So as a young man, I was consumed with myself. I was consumed with my own success, academically, athletically, vocationally. I always had to be first, to the point where I kind of became my own God. I wouldn't even acknowledge that God existed for a time. But after a season of spiritual investigation, I became convinced that Jesus really did live, and that he really did die, and that he really did come back from the dead on my behalf. So I knelt down next to my bed, and I begged God to call the shots in my life. And now I've devoted my whole life to following the example of Jesus by serving others every day. That was my story in four sentences. Four sentences packed with a lot of years, a lot of triumphs and tragedies, a lot of laughter and heartache, but a synopsis of who I was before I met Jesus, what led me to him, and how he's changing me even today. That's my story. What's your story? You know, back at the beginning of our Transform 1-8 Vision Initiative, we said that God has given every Christian three transformational tools that would allow you to be a change agent wherever and whatever setting God puts you in. So those three tools are your story, your calling, and your finances. That if you would leverage those three things for God's kingdom, the world around you would begin to change or be transformed for the better. And so I ask you again, what's your story? It's an important question because the Bible is filled with people who changed the world around them simply by telling their story. So Philip came to Nathanael and he told him his story about meeting Jesus, and they both became world changers. Andrew told Peter his story, and Peter went on to lead the whole church movement. The blind man told everyone who asked, "I don't know who that Jesus is exactly, but I know that once I was blind and now I see." He just told his story. The woman at the well, she told her story. She simply said, "You all need to meet this teacher who told me everything that I ever did." And a whole village came to Jesus. A demon-possessed guy was healed, and he wanted to follow Jesus, but Jesus wouldn't let him. And he said, no, you stay here, and you just tell people the story of what I did for you. And the man did. And when Jesus came back to that town, a crowd of about 10,000 people gathered to see his miraculous feeding, all because a guy told his story. These are average, ordinary, untrained, non-clergy kind of people, and they just told their story. And so why is this important? Why is your story important? Well, because everyone has a story to tell. God has given you a unique story precisely so you can tell it. It's a story that involves some combination of your sin and God's redemption in your life. And it doesn't have to be glamorous at all. A lot of people, you know, suffer from what I would call story envy. They say things like, "Well, my story isn't dramatic enough. Like, can I make something up? Like, I ran a whole drug ring. I was the Walter White of Mill Creek." You know, he's the drug dealer on Breaking Bad. Or "I was a gang leader of a vicious gang in Wesleyville." Or, "I was a pimp. I ran a prostitution ring in Lake City." No, listen, it doesn't have to be dramatic. And if it is dramatic, praise God. He does that all the time. But it doesn't have to be. And so if you're thinking, "Well, I don't have a story," or "My story is kind of small or lame compared to others," let me just put it this way. If the living God of the universe has taken the time to speak to you, like he has shaped you or has helped you understand something, or he has grown you in some way to be a different person, that's a big freaking deal. Like, regardless of what you think, there is this holy ground where God has intersected your life and you are changed because of it. And if you were to take that holy ground and put it into words, guys, you have a story that's worth telling. Every Christian has a story to tell. But here's another reason this is important. No one can argue with your story. Like, you're simply relaying the truth as you experienced it. Everyone is big into telling your truth today, aren't they? Well, you can do one better. You can tell the truth. Like, they can argue with you about the Bible, about the resurrection, about doctrine or church history, but your story is your story. And people are longing for an authentic example of true faith. And so when you say, "Here's what God has done and is doing in my life," people will listen because they're longing for hope in a dark world, longing for a better way. There's a third reason that this is important. It's because people will trust your story. You have a circle of people around you, family, friends, coworkers, neighbors, who have some level of trust in you. And trust is a valuable commodity in our culture. You see it all the time when someone's looking for a mechanic or a dentist or a pediatrician. People don't look to commercials or billboards to help them decide anymore. They'll ask their friends or they'll throw it out on their social media network. "Can someone recommend a doctor for my kids to go to?" Why would they do it that way? Well, because for the most important things in life, we listen to the people we trust. This is true of faith as well. People trust you. But listen, I just acknowledge, they don't trust someone like me. I'm a stranger to them. And so I can stand up here ranting and raving all I want about Jesus, but a 5-minute, well-constructed personal story from you will have a much greater impact because we listen to people we trust. Friends influence friends. And so today we begin a sermon series that's going to lead us into Christmas called Lit. And as we look at the expectation of Jesus that his followers will bring light into a dark world, we'll be exploring a bunch of practical ways that we can do that, be light bringers, both individually and collectively. And today, I'm talking about the power of your story. And so as a launching point, I want you to turn to a passage in the book of 1 Peter. It's one of the last books in the Bible, so if you start at the back and go forward, you'll find it quickly. Or you can easily look it up on your YouVersion app on your phone or device. But 1 Peter, and we're going to start in chapter 2. But as you're getting there, let me just tell you a little bit about what's going on. When Peter's writing this letter, he's writing to a persecuted church. It was illegal to be a Christian. Nero, the emperor, is in control, and he's done unspeakable things to Christians in his empire. And so can you just imagine for a second living in constant fear of being outed for your faith? Like if coming to church, you know, a church like this was illegal, like if you were risking your life every time you did it. It was not an easy time to be a Christian. And it really, honestly, it didn't look like Christianity had much of a future. And yet, they turned Rome upside down. And one of the major reasons is they knew how to tell their story. And so I want to look first at chapter 2, verse 9. And Peter says these words. He says, "But you are a chosen people, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people belonging to God, that you may declare the praises of him who called you out of darkness and into his wonderful light." So what's Peter doing here? He's saying, let me remind you of who you are. And he uses four phrases to describe them and us. You can highlight or underline them. Each of these phrases has a rich Old Testament context. He says, you are a chosen people, royal priesthood, holy nation, and he says, belonging to God. All of these describe the royal privileges we have now access to as children of God. We were paupers who have been adopted by the king and invited to live in the king's castle. And so then Peter calls out what should happen as a result of this special privilege that we have. He says, because of this new status, you will declare the praises of him who has called you out. You can underline that phrase as well. This new status will cause you to speak, to declare his praise as you go about your life. He reminds us at the end that you used to be in darkness, but now you've been called into the light. This series is called Lit. This is why we should tell our story, to declare his praises, and out of this gratefulness for all that he's done for us. So Peter's urging here is to declare God's praises. It's a good reminder of an important truth, that the gospel, the good news, must be spoken. It must be said out loud. There's this sentimental quote that's making the rounds again. It's from St. Francis. It says, "Preach the gospel at all times, and if necessary, use words." Right? And I love the sentiment. It's a call for Christians to live out your faith and not just run your mouth all the time. Right? That's a good thing. But here's what we need to be careful about with this quote. The pendulum cannot swing all the way over to the side that says that we just need to live out our faith and never talk about it. Because the gospel is a spoken message. The word gospel just means good news. And so it's news that's meant to be shared. It's something that needs to be declared. And for another person to really become a follower of Jesus, there's a body of truth that needs to be communicated to them, evaluated by them before they can ever come to faith. 100 times in the New Testament, this word gospel is used. And in every instance, something is being announced, proclaimed, taught, or shared. And so how do we do that well? And I mean, the elephant in the room right now is that every one of you are saying, I don't want to do that at all. Like, there's nothing in me that wants to go talk about my faith with people. But let me remind you of something. This practice of talking about the gospel is normal. It's not abnormal for Christians. Christians have been doing this for millennia, right? In fact, one worldwide missions organization has been doing initiatives all over the world, even to this day, in every country. And they have this challenge that they do with believers to share your faith with one person a day, right? they came into the United States and they had to dumb it down to once per week, and people still weren't doing it because we're such wusses, right? If you want to talk about people who should have been scared to share their faith, it was Peter's audience. It was illegal for them to do so, and if they did, they would be killed by the government. But he still urged them to do it. How much more should we be eager to do it? So I want to look at the how, and if you do, to just turn a page over to 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 15. And he describes kind of this process, and he says this: "But in your hearts, honor Christ the Lord as holy, always being prepared." Listen, always being prepared to make a defense to anyone who asks you for the reason for the hope that's in you. "Yet do it with gentleness and respect, having a good conscience, so that when you are slandered, those who revile your good behavior in Christ may be put to shame." Here's what Peter covers here. He covers the who, what, and how of sharing your story. All right, so just look what he says here. He says, be prepared to share your story with who? What does it say in verse 15? He says, anyone who asks you. You should underline that. What I think he's saying here is, don't be stupid about how you do this. Don't force it on people. Don't ram your faith down people's throat. But when the opportunity presents itself in conversation, be prepared to share your story. And notice, it should be coming up in conversation because people are going to be asking you. They're going to say things like, "Hey, I noticed you were super patient with that coworker on our meeting today." Or, "I noticed that you bow your head before you eat in the lunchroom. What's that all about?" Or, "I see you on social media. You're really intentional about spending time with your kids." Or, "You used to make rude remarks about everyone and you've really toned that down. What's going on?" Or, "Students, maybe someone will say to you, I never see you getting messed up at the parties when everyone else is out." And when people notice these things and they ask you a question like that, he says here, be ready to share. What? What should we share? That's the next question. Do we share the history of the Christian faith? Do we share some sort of theological treatise or why the Bible is trustworthy? No. What do we share? He tells us at the end of verse 15. He says, share the reason for the hope that is in you. Just underline that. That's the what. The assignment that we have isn't to bust out the doctrine. You know, some of you are like, "Listen, I'm not educated enough, or I'm not an expert enough. I wouldn't know what to say." That's fine. That's not the assignment. The assignment is to be ready and willing to talk about your hope in Christ. What is the reason for your confidence in Jesus? And your reason might be lame. Let's just be honest. But it's your reason. So give it. You're not responsible to give C.S. Lewis's reason. You're not responsible to give Billy Graham's reason or Mother Teresa's reason. You're only responsible to give the reason for your hope. And so you may say something like, "Listen, my life didn't make sense, but Jesus' way of life makes sense to me." Or, "I grew up in a stale religion, and then I was invited to a church that challenged me to actually walk with Jesus, and it changed my life." Now, I realize that there are going to be those of you who get into conversations that go much, much deeper than this, with someone of a different religion or maybe who's put a lot of thought into their beliefs about these things. And that's great. Like, what an awesome faith adventure that God is going to take you on. But you don't need to start there. Just start with the reason for your hope, your story. But then he tells us how to have this conversation. Look, he says in the transition from verse 15 to verse 16, he says to do it with gentleness and respect and in good conscience. I'd love for you to underline those phrases. This simply describes the attitude of not being overly impressed with yourself and giving dignity to the person that you're talking to. We're not called to be brash. We're not called to win all the arguments. We're not called to be condescending or defensive. You ever seen an arrogant Christian? Yeah. I don't even want to be a part of whatever it is that they are, right? He says, but be gentle and respectful. So when you're sharing your story, your attitude is as important as your words. That's what Peter tells us here. And remember, we are witnesses. That's what he calls us. We're not prosecuting attorney. Peter's instructing us on how to make a defense. This is a courtroom term, and it brings us to mind of a witness being called to the stand and offering our testimony based on simply what we've seen or heard or experienced. You're not the lawyer arguing the case. You're not the judge making the final verdict. You're the witness called to take the stand to talk about your experience. And yes, conversations about faith can become frustrating. and the fear of rejection and looking stupid and not knowing what to say, it naturally raises our defenses and puts us on edge. And people can also be just rude or dismissive or even belligerent when we share our story. But Peter's command remains: be gentle and respectful. Why? Because your attitude must be consistent with the gospel. You must have an outward appearance that conveys love and compassion, the love and compassion of Christ, regardless of what you feel like on the inside. Now, I just want to take a moment and give just a little crash course on the gospel. What is it? Because frankly, it isn't just your story that's going to bring someone to faith. It's his story as well. And the thing that has changed you is when your story collided with and got unfolded into his story. And so what is his story? What is the gospel, this good news? How would you put it into words? A lot of people would just say, well, Jesus died 2,000 years ago and he came back to life. Do you want to accept Jesus into your heart? Okay, but if you step back from those words and just think about them for a second through the ears of someone who's unfamiliar, they make absolutely no sense, right? So what if some dude died on a cross 2,000 years ago? What does that have to do with me? And what on earth does it mean to accept Jesus into my heart? Thoroughly confusing. Or another approach is to scare the hell out of people, right? One pastor was asked a question about sharing your faith. The question was, you know, when you're talking to someone about Jesus, where do you begin? And the pastor said this. He says, I start with hell. Like, if they understand hell and they feel the weight of the hell, that they'll get the gospel. What? No. And it's not because we should skirt the reality of hell. Hell stands as a monument to the seriousness of our sin before God. But the Bible doesn't start with hell. Paul doesn't start with hell. Jesus doesn't start with hell. No. So what is the gospel? Well, at its core, the gospel is a message of restoration that repairs the relationship between us and God. There's a really beautiful word that the scriptures use repeatedly when talking about the gospel. It's the word reconciled. It means that at one time, the soul, what was in harmony with God, where it was supposed to be. Because if you're reconciling, you're bringing something back to how it was supposed to be in the first place. And so I don't want to start with hell. I want to start with how we were created to be in relationship with God. When the soul was free to walk in what it was created to walk in. And here's the thing. At the deepest level, your soul and my soul, even though we've walked away, they remember. And we can get on the hamster wheel of life and we can run and run and run like, and we're never satisfied. Like when you graduated from high school or college and you wanted to go out and get this and get this and get this. And so you go and get those things and it doesn't satisfy you. And so you try to go out and get more and more of those things that didn't satisfy you to begin with. But the soul, it remembers something. And no matter how wealthy you get, no matter how great your friends are, no matter how happy your marriage is, no matter how good your kids are or successful your job is, there's always going to be this kind of deep, dull ache because nothing temporary can satisfy the eternal thing that God has sealed in you when he designed you. And so this isn't a deal about avoiding hell. The message of reconciliation is that thing that you long for, that place where you're short-circuiting, that longing deep inside of you, Christ has made a way to reconnect all of that by coming to earth and dying and ultimately conquering death so that you who have been separated from what's eternal can be made right again. That's the good news. That's the gospel, the bigger story that yours is connected to. So on that note, I want to get really practical and I just want to share a few tips about preparing a compelling story. Peter told us to be prepared to give the reason for our hope. And so are you prepared? How would you tell someone what is the reason for your hope? Let's think about that and what that would mean for just a minute. Here are a couple of tips. The first on your story is to keep it simple. I've said it a couple times, but let me just reiterate. Don't make the mistake of thinking that you have to prove the Bible, you know, or create a brilliant intellectual argument to impress people. There have been times when I ask somebody to tell me their faith story, and it's just too long. Like, I thought I was getting a 3-minute synopsis, and instead, I grew a beard by the time they were done, you know. They weaved in half a dozen different plots and storylines. They talked about books they read and supernatural experiences they had and conferences that they attended and aisles they walked down, angels that appeared in their bedroom, dead relatives they talked to in the middle of the night, whatever. We need to be diligent about telling our story of faith briefly. The elevator version. I shared mine at the beginning of this sermon in 4 sentences, but that doesn't happen automatically. You need to sit down and think about it, work it out. But when it's simple, it gives the person you're talking to space to consider, and maybe even ask a follow-up question or two. They may even want a little bit more. You don't have to spew it all out all at once. Keep it simple. Second, keep it current. So it can include some details of your past, but people need to know how Jesus is changing you right now. Like if you dwell too much on your past or on your sin, it's actually overshadowing how Jesus is rescuing you now. Like even for those of you who met Jesus as a child, who grew up in a Christian home, you don't want to say, you know, well, I grew up in a church and I still go to church today. Sunday after Sunday is just church, church, church. Like that's not a compelling story. So keep it current. Like what's the compelling thing that Jesus is doing in you right now? I was someone who grew up in a Christian home. But if I just say I accepted Jesus when I was 6 at a puppet show and the rest is history, I mean, that's true. It's just not very compelling, right? I was having a conversation one time with a gentleman in his home. He was a new engineer in town. He was coming from actually another country, and our conversation moved to faith. And I told him this phrase. I said, I have found something that has so captivated me that I've given my whole life's work to it. He's leaning in, right? And I told him about Jesus. I don't think the 6-year-old in the puppet show thing would have made him lean in. So keep it current. What's Jesus up to right now? Here's the third. Keep it free from confusing terms. Over the years, Christians we've developed our own confusing language of cliches and phrases that quite frankly, other people don't understand. So we'll say things like, you know, have you found Jesus? And they're like, well, I didn't know he was missing, you know, or have you asked Jesus into your heart? And they're like, I'm not sure he'd fit in there, right? We come up with all these things. The Bible tells me so, and I want you to hear my testimony and guard your heart and have your quiet time and everything happens for a reason and I don't feel led and give me a hedge of protection and pray the sinner's prayer, right? Do you get my point? It's an endless string of Christian cliches that are meaningless to someone who's not familiar. And here's the problem. When we get nervous in the middle of a faith conversation, every dumb cliche we've ever heard just starts flowing out without thought. So we've got to figure out a way to tell the story of Christ and our story of faith in a way that's not God talk. It's not religion talk. It's just normal talk. So let me remind you as we kind of approach the finish line here of just two important things about telling your story before we practice some of this. I heard my friend Dan Nold say this sentence about a month ago, and it's just so perfect. It's the first important thing, I think, as it relates to telling your story. And it's this. It's that all the good stuff is on the other side of awkward, right? So some of you are thinking, you know, I think I might be inspired enough right now to share my story with someone. I just wish it wasn't so awkward. Like, Derek, if you could promise me that it wouldn't be awkward, or if you could teach me some method that will remove the awkward, I might give this a try. Let me assure you, this is bad news, but that there's no amount of training, equipping, practicing, modeling that's going to eliminate awkward for you. But, if you will press through the awkward, all the good stuff is just on the other side. I was having a lunch conversation with a business leader in town whom I admire very much. And we had small talk for a while over lunch, and finally I thought, I'm going in, right? And I asked him this question. I said, what is the current state of your soul? And it took 2 or 3 minutes of squirming. I mean squirming. It felt like 2 or 3 hours. And every part of me in that silence wanted to say, never mind, never mind, and just make a joke and move on. That's what I do. But we sat there in uncomfortable silence, and then he started to talk. And we had 60 minutes of unbelievable, life-giving conversation about Jesus. I got to share my story of faith, and to this day, our hearts are knit together because we pushed through awkward, and we got to the good stuff. So one of your buddies lost his mom, or someone's going through a rough patch in their marriage, or they have a kid going off the rails. Will you push through awkward and offer to pray for them? Or push through offered and ask, how are you doing? Or does your life seem fulfilled right now? Or how is your soul? Or did you grow up in church? And if so, was it a good experience? Like, all the good stuff is just on the other side of that awkward moment. So don't avoid it. Press into it. Here's the second reminder. You're the teller of the story, not the changer of the heart. And so often we think that there's something that we have to do, some magic words that we have to say to kind of help Jesus along in the heart change side of this. But John 6:63 basically says, it is the Spirit who gives life, and the flesh is of no help at all. So when the Bible talks about people who don't know or who don't follow Jesus, it uses words like blind and deaf. It even uses words like dead. That person is spiritually dead to the things of God. And so when we're talking about evangelism or we're talking about sharing the gospel or sharing your story, a miracle has to happen in order for them to respond. The dead has to be brought back to life. And you can't do that. I hate to break it to you, but we don't have that power. But sometimes we don't think that way, which is why we don't get on our faces enough about this. Like if I were to tell you that God's assignment tonight was for you to go out to a cemetery and walk into that cemetery, and God's not asking for all of them, but just get one. Just one person back to life out of that cemetery. What would you do? What's your strategy? Like if that was your assignment tonight, God wants you to go raise someone from the dead in that local cemetery, what would your approach be? Where would you start? Hire a good communicator? Like bring in a band? Call up our worship leader, Chrissy, and be like, hey, how portable is that sound system? Would you start with your well-crafted story? No, you would get on your face before God and cry out, God, I can't do this. I'm hopeless. There's nothing that I can do. God, please, please, please. You raise someone from the dead. The flesh is of no help at all. This is your territory. And guys, we have to remember that this whole business of heart change is above our pay grade. Your job isn't to save people. It's not to get them to fall on their knees in repentance. God didn't put you in charge of that. That's God's job. And frankly, He can keep it. But you cry out to Him for open doors where you can do your little part. And then you just point people to Him, and He does the heavy lifting. You don't have to convince anybody of anything. Let Jesus run His kingdom. Salvation is His job, and our job is to humbly present people with the opportunity to meet Him. And so here's what I'm going to ask you to do as a next step today. It's this. It's to share your faith story with at least one person before Christmas. Now, that involves thinking about it, probably writing it down, memorizing it, and then praying, pleading for God for an open door for you to share it. And I realize that there are all different kinds of stories. Some of you came to Christ later in life, and it was a radical turnaround. Others, you started off well, then you wandered away from God, then you came back. Others, you've kind of been a Christian as long as you can remember. There was no real moment you can point to. All of that is okay. But the simple construct that we like to use here is just to think about it this way. B.C., before Christ, then the cross, and then A.D. In other words, there's the old you, and then there's when you met Jesus, and then there's the new you. Now remember, when you're sharing your story with someone, all they need to know is, does knowing Jesus make a difference in a human life? Are you changed as a result of your relationship with God? That's the question that your story needs to answer. Now, for those of you who came to Christ in an early age, the BC thing doesn't really work. And so think of it this way. What is the great need in your life that Jesus is meeting? You may not have even realized it until after you were saved. Maybe before Jesus, your life was all about fear. Like you were just afraid of everything, and then you meet Christ and He gave you security. Or maybe you were all about impressing people, image management, and you met Christ, now you're focused on serving people instead of impressing them. Maybe it was loneliness. You came out of a broken family and you felt isolated, and you met Christ and He adopted you into His own family where you feel like His child now. I don't know what yours is, but whatever it is, you have to search your heart and find out what is that key concept on the front side of the cross for you. And then you met Christ. How did that happen? And then what's the key word that describes the new? And that's how you build your story. That's how you keep it simple and current, and how you keep it free from churchy terminology. And I want to remind you, your story can make an enormous impact on somebody. It's worth working on. It's worth practicing. It's worth getting right. It's worth getting on your knees every day and saying, God, if there's an opportunity for me to share this, if there's anybody that you would want me to tell my story of faith to, it would be about the greatest joy in my life today. And if the doors don't open, then I won't. But if they do open, I'll tell it in a way that's humble and sincere and gentle and respectful, and I'll leave the heart changing to you because that's your job and not mine. So we're going to end today in an unusual way. our site pastors are going to come, and they're going to give you a little challenge. And here's what I'd say to prepare you for that. Do it. Take the challenge that they're going to lay down today. All the good stuff is on the other side of awkward. Now, aren't you curious? And for those of you watching online today, what they're doing in the room right now is encouraging people to just pair up, or get in little groups, and practice telling their story using this little construct of BC, the cross, and then AD. The idea is to practice in a safe environment. And so my challenge to you, if you're watching at home or on your phone or whatever, is to do the same, to find a family member or a Christian friend and just practice on them so that when God opens the door for real, you'll be ready. God bless you guys.